You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, taking you around the American League East for MLB.com Extras. It continues to be a three-team race as we get into second half action. The Blue Jays, the Red Sox, and the Orioles as the trade deadline quickly approaches. Let's check in on the big top three, starting with the Red Sox and our MLB.com Red Sox reporter, Ian Brown. Ian, first podcast of the second half of the season, so the All-Star break is behind us. It's been a couple of weeks since we've chatted, so we can do some catching up. And, of course, the trade deadline only about 10 days away, so plenty of time still for teams to make moves, including the Red Sox. But as we record this podcast on Thursday afternoon, it's the first place Boston Red Sox as they've come out of the gate in the second half playing good baseball. They've kind of gotten what they need when they need it. And the case on Wednesday night was they didn't exactly get the ideal first start in a Red Sox uniform for Drew Pomeranz. He was spotted an 8-0 lead, but he couldn't get out of the fourth inning. But Hanley Ramirez to the rescue, 3-home-run effort, great performance for him. But let's start with Pomeranz. Overall, obviously, that's not what you were looking for. He looked good for three innings, but the fourth, it was something that we just keep seeing from Red Sox starters, the big inning.
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that really hurt Pomeranz last night was this Giants team. I think he'd already faced them three times this year, and that's just a tough thing to face the same team that many times in a short window of time. And, you know, everything going on with it being his first start with the Red Sox, first start at Fenway and everything, I think that just caught up with him a little bit. And I think we'll get a better indicator of where he's at, you know, when he says, I think he's going to face the Tigers next time he takes the mound. So I take yesterday with a little bit of a grain of salt. He said after the game, you know, that's not me, the guy you saw. So no need to put up the panic button just yet. I don't think that was the best matchup for him for his first start with Boston.
Yeah, when you switch leagues, you don't expect to see a team that you've already seen that many times in your old division, but that's the way it panned out. He also had to cope with the fact that the Red Sox were wearing, in my opinion, Ian, I'm sorry if I offend anyone, but the ugliest uniforms of their 100-plus year history is those mid-70s pullovers, and that's what they went with. And I'm happy they got a win with those uniforms, but those are awful.
Yeah, not a big fan of the 1975 throwbacks there.
I mean, you see them over and over again because, of course, Carlton Fisk hit the home run with that uniform on, so they'll always be part of the Red Sox history, but I'll go with the button-up shirts any day over those. All right, the Pomeranz deal, the Red Sox have been busy since we last talked. They've made numerous trades, Ian, but let's start with that one because they needed to add a starter. They do. And when this move happened, I think it was kind of split. It was like, hey, we got Drew Pomeranz. He's an all-star this year. We'll see how that kind of goes forward. They gave up a decent amount to get him. When you talk about Anderson Espinosa, the number one pitching prospect in the organization, but a guy in the low levels of the organization, still years away from the big leagues. When you saw this trade on paper, what was your first reaction?
My first reaction is, boy, Dave Dombrowski and John Henry and Tom Warner, these guys really want to win this year because you don't make a move like that sacrificing the best pitching prospect in your organization unless you really want to win right now. At the same time, they looked at Espinosa. He's 18 years old. It's still hard to get a read on exactly how good he's going to be. So it's a calculated risk when you make a deal like that. But they really like Pomeranz. They did a lot of work on him. They're very comfortable with who he is as a pitcher. And you know, they control him, I think, for two more years after this one. So they like that control cost that they have with Drew. But, yeah, the acquisition cost was high. But, you know, we'll just have to see how that pans out. That was a risk they were willing to make because they didn't think they were going to go anywhere this year unless they got another bona fide starting pitcher. And they believe they got that in Drew Pomeranz.
And, of course, the fears for Pomeranz are, hey, this is a guy that was pitching in a pitcher's park in the National League this year, and he goes to the American League in the East with his a bunch of hitters' ballparks. But then on the other side of it, here's a guy that was once a top five overall pick. He was a top prospect in the game, and he kind of had a rough go of it because he kept getting moved around. He had to pitch in Colorado after getting traded over from the Indians, and he was good in Oakland a year ago pitching out of the bullpen. So I think there's reason to be optimistic as a Red Sox fan, certainly, that this is just the year he's figured it out and he's going to be good going forward, and we will certainly see. So he's there to help the rotation, obviously, Ian. And then Brad Ziegler came in to help a bullpen that who knew when they it needed as much help as it does right now, because suddenly Ziegler looks like he's going to be closing games. Koji Uehara goes to the DL now. They do get Tozawa back, I guess, for the weekend, hopefully. But this bullpen suddenly kind of in shambles, and that Ziegler move looks even better now than it did when they made it.
Yeah, no, I love the move for Brad Ziegler, and you know, didn't really give up anybody who was considered an A-level prospect in that deal. And yeah, I mean, in hindsight, God, I mean, well, the trade was already in motion, and it just happened to get announced and consummated the same night that Craig Kimbrel got hurt and had to have knee surgery. And then, you know, then you had the Tozawa hiccup, and now you know, Koji's hurt, so the trade really couldn't have come at a better time. And the Red Sox are not only going to be asking a lot from Ziegler, but also Matt Barnes, who got out of a bases-loaded, nobody-out jam in that Wednesday night game against the Giants. They're going to need a lot from him. And guys like Heath Henry and Robbie Ross Jr., they're going to need different guys to step up in that bullpen right now to keep this team afloat until Kimbrel comes back, and until Koji's probably going to be out about a month.
And how about Joe Kelly, Ian? Is that another guy that can help? He's down in the minors, and I guess he's pitched very well pitching out of the bullpen. Is there hope that Joe Kelly can come back to this big league club in a relief role and be a real late season find for this team, basically?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the hope for Joe Kelly, is that he's going to come out throwing that 98-mile-an-hour pitch, you know, in the bullpen over shorter stints, and it's going to be that much more dangerous. He can still work in some of his secondary stuff and just not have to go through a lineup three or four times anymore. Just go through a lineup once, and they think that can make him a much better pitcher. And Joe Kelly, I really think they're going to need him here, especially with some of these injuries. You know, I think it won't be long. You know, I'd say definitely by the trading deadline, when you probably get rid of a Clay Buchholz by then, I think that you'll have a spot for Joe Kelly on your roster by that time.
So they've added Pomerantz, they've added Ziegler, they added Aaron Hill, which is a nice piece to have on the team as well, coming off the bench and being able to play different parts and different roles. But there's still some time to go before the deadline. Is Dave Dombrowski done? What's left to do if he's not?
Yeah, no, I think he's still looking for some pitching help, and definitely, you know, in the bullpen, he's trying to see what he can get. You know, I think they feel pretty good, reasonably good with their starting rotation now. You know, they'll watch what Eduardo Rodriguez does, you know, his next couple starts. But, yeah, I think they'll definitely look for another reliever for sure now with this recent rash of injuries they had in the bullpen.
Brian, the All-Star game is behind us. We're into the second half of the season, less than 2 weeks to go before the trade deadline. So a good chance to kind of regroup and look at this Yankees team as far as big picture. So we'll do a little bit of that. And the team played well this week. Obviously a big series with the Orioles. I mean, if the Yankees are going to consider themselves still alive in this thing, now is the time. And to be able to win a series over the Orioles is obviously big. To get the first two wins with some great pitching is big as well. And you tack on how well Masahiro Tanaka pitched on Sunday night against the Red Sox to win a game of that series. And you have basically three straight solid starts from this rotation. Tanaka on Sunday, Nova on Monday, Evaldi on Tuesday. Where did this come from?
Good question. I mean, the Yankees have been waiting all year for this, so it looks good, and it further complicates the idea of should Brian Cashman and his underlings be buyers or sellers going into this. The players have been challenged to show that they had something in the tank to prove that there was a reason not to break up the band, so to speak, and these three games, I think you can look at that, and I don't think it tells you they absolutely must buy, but I think it also tells you I'm not 100% sure they're going to sell. So the Yankees have been saying for a long time they have a better team on paper than they've played. They've underachieved. If they can continue to get that kind of starting pitching and score some runs like that, especially the 7-1 game against Baltimore, they've been playing so many tight games that to have a 6-run lead was quite a luxury for them. If they can continue that, on this homestand, especially, you got two more with Baltimore. You got the Giants coming in. Then they go to Houston. The schedule doesn't get very easy from here, but it's going to shape a lot of what Brian Cashman is going to do between now and August 1st.
They've benefited a little bit from a banged-up Orioles lineup, no doubt, but there's still a lot of talented bats in that lineup, and they've done a nice job so far through this series. Obviously, two more games to go, but if they can take three of four or sweep the Orioles, that is huge. And I don't think anybody expected the Yankees to become sellers until the very end. I mean, they're not going to pull a move early. They're going to wait till the last second, I would think, and make sure that they're out of this thing. So still 10, 11 days to go and for this team to try to prove itself. Let's get into the deadline, though, because obviously they have a lot of players that, for a team that may be out of it, they have a lot of players that teams will be very much interested in. And I know we've gone over them before. You have Chapman and Miller and Beltran. But when you look at Chapman and what Chapman did the other night to hit 105 twice, Brian, on Monday night, as far as StatCast goes, he was throwing as hard as he's thrown all season long. The fact that he missed the big chunk early in the season because of the suspension, does that make him even more appealing now? Because he seems really fresh at a point where maybe some pitchers are starting to get a little bit tired. He's as strong right now as he's been all season.
That's a really good point. And he's strong to begin with. I mean, this is a guy who, when he was with the Reds, they pitched him 5 days in a row. So he's kind of built like almost like a linebacker in the NFL. This is a big guy. He's strong. He's a workhorse. And he's been underworked, I think, by comparison from what he's had in past years. So whether it's the Yankees or another team going forward here, you're certainly getting a fresh left arm, one with a high octane velocity. I think there's a lot of teams out there that would be happy to put either Chapman or Miller in their bullpen. I mean, you could probably make a case there's 29 teams that would love to have a guy like Andrew Miller or Aroldis Chapman. So if the Yankees do choose to sell, they should be in a good situation. And with Chapman in particular, let's not forget, if they do wind up trading him, he says he'd like to stay in New York. He's enjoyed his time there. They could always try and re-sign him in the offseason, so and pick up a prospect or two here. So it could be a win-win for the Yankees either way.
And you would think absolutely they're going to end up getting more for Chapman than they gave up, because they got a good deal, I mean, from the Reds because of the situation, because of the domestic issue. They kind of bought low on Chapman, and now he's pitching great, and you would think they'll be able to get something for him. Back to the 105 and the radar gun on Monday night, because seeing the game on TV, you could actually hear the oohs and ahs from the crowd, and it seemed like the atmosphere at Yankee Stadium, those fans were recognizing that, yeah, this guy always throws hard, but wow, tonight he seems to be at a different level.
And Brian McCann was saying that he looks up at the scoreboard every time that Chapman throws a pitch, because you just never know what the radar gun's going to say, and we've seen a lot of the triple digits from him. Actually, I think the 105, if you go back and look, he probably overthrew those a little bit. I don't think either of them were in the strike zone. So there's a fine line there, but, I mean, he's a freak of nature. It's fun to watch. You don't see guys throw 105. You just don't see that. And when you've got guys like Dylan Betances and Andrew Miller kind of wowed by it and just taking a step back and saying how cool it is to see that, as Alex Rodriguez says, we're watching the guy in the world who throws the baseball the hardest, and it's cool to see.
So Chapman obviously is a chip. Miller would be a chip that would get a lot more back for the Yankees. But when you look at hitters, and Carlos Beltran is the obvious guy, obviously the partial no-trade clause for him, so there's a limited amount of teams that you can trade him to without actually getting his permission first, and he seems like he wants to stay in New York if given the opportunity. How cautious are the Yankees just as far as, hey, we kind of need to keep this guy healthy, because if we do decide to sell, he's going to be a guy that we could use, and if he's to get hurt in the next 10 days, suddenly you can't do anything with him.
That's true, and there's always a gamble with that. You remember he had the hamstring through right before the All-Star game, so he was able to come back from that. And I think that Joe Girardi's been talking a lot about needing to find a DH day for Carlos Beltran, but it's been so difficult to take his bat out of the lineup. I mean, he really has, along with Didi Gregorius, he's been their best hitter. And so they certainly want to keep him healthy and in the lineup as long as he's wearing pinstripes. And that's a real tough balancing act, I think, for the Yankees as far as looking forward and saying, all right, are they in it? Are they not in it? Because if they are in it, obviously you have to have Beltran. You got to keep playing him. But if you're not, I think he's a veteran bat that could be appealing to a lot of teams. There's been talk about maybe Cleveland. Maybe he goes back to Kansas City where he started his career. I think that if you came to him and said, look, we've taken a hard look at it. We just don't think it's in the cards this year. We want to put you on a contender.
I think Beltran would accept that regardless of what the no-trade situation is. I think that this guy wants to win a World Series ring. His preference would be to do it in New York. He owns a house in New York. He's got the same house he had when he was with the Mets. They never left the area. But I think that winning a championship, he got a taste of it when he was with St. Louis. He went to the World Series. I think he wants a ring, and if that opportunity presents itself, I think the Yankees will jump at it.
Bill, we got to reset things a little bit here as we get ready for the second half of the season is underway. It's been a couple of weeks since we chatted. That was back before the All-Star break. The Rays were struggling then. They're still struggling now. They did snap their losing streak at 8 games on Sunday, but another loss on Monday night at Coors Field. You look at this team right now, 20 games under 500, the trade deadline a couple of weeks away. And I guess in a sense, front office has to make a decision. Are we going to make some minor moves, tweak this thing in the hopes that everything that's gone wrong won't go wrong again in a year? Or do you blow things up? Have you had any insight into what the front office might be thinking?
Well, the front office generally never tips their hand. So that leaves us to speculate, which we're best at, right? based on where they finished the first half, where they are in the standings, and how they've played, I don't think there's much hope for this year. Having said that, I think you spend the rest of the year looking at some guys to see, to best reset it for next year, whether they decide to blow it up or not. I know, for example, they've already brought up Luke Maley at catcher, getting a good look at him. And, there's other guys in the minor leagues, maybe a Daniel Robertson at shortstop. But as far as the trading goes, I really would be surprised if one or two of the starters don't get traded. Looking at the back row in the press box before the game this past weekend at Tropicana Field, loaded with, opposing scouts. Some of them were higher level than the normal scouts, too, to watch Archer, Odorizzi, and more. And all three of them pitched well. So – And it's a seller's market right now. There's a lot of teams that are in races, and they need one guy to get them over the top. So now might be the time to trade one or two of these starters to, maybe rid themselves of some payroll in the future, give other guys a chance, and also pick up some really good prospects. I would be surprised if it doesn't happen. I mean, I'm kind of surprised if something hadn't happened already based on the weekend, but I would expect something before any of those three guys next turn around the rotation based on the fact that, why not get them sooner than later and get an extra start out of them? Who knows? Maybe they want to see something else. Maybe the Rays are driving too hard a bargain. Some of what I've heard, the Rays have made it clear they have to be, blown out of the water for Chris Archer. So probably it's going to be Odorizzi or Moore would be one of those two that somebody would try and grab. But again, it's a seller's market, and I think the Rays could, maybe well heal themselves with some of what they could get in return.
Yeah, and all three of those guys controllable, obviously, after this year as well, so it's not a rental situation for any team that gets involved. And there's really not a lot of starters out there outside of the Rays. I mean, you think about Jeremy Hellickson, and we already saw Drew Pomerantz move. There's not a lot of starting pitching to be had at this trade deadline, unlike sometimes in years past, and that can only help out the Rays. And maybe that's, Bill, you said it, maybe they're driving a hard bargain, and why not, with a couple of weeks to go, get as much as you can. Obviously, the different guys would get different things in return. You mentioned at Archer, they'd have to be blown away. Odorizzi and Moore, probably a little less of a return. Now, one thing that's interesting is some of the teams that could be most interested in those guys, Bill, are in the same division with the Rays. Maybe not as much so with the Red Sox after they got Pomerantz, but who knows, they could still use another starter. But we know the Orioles are desperate for starting pitching. The Blue Jays could use another starter. Are the Rays willing to trade within the division, or are they going to, I mean, when you think of them historically, are they more likely to only really field offers from outside the AL East?
Well, historically, most teams are that way. They won't trade within their own division. Having said that, one thing the Rays seem to do is a lot of times break with what is conventional wisdom. So who knows? They might trade with one of their, division rivals. Depends what they can get in return. So, but part of the problem looking at this group is it's like what, it seems like there's a lot of areas that they need to address. And, what specifically are you going to get? I know even when they won on Sunday, they had a bunch of home runs, and it's like, it's almost like that's the only way they've been able to win. I know last night in Colorado, Longoria had triples twice, and they weren't able to get him home. One of those, you know, was with no out. So it's just a lot of things have gone wrong. I mean, the bullpen's worn out now because the starting pitching didn't pitch well at the beginning, you know, and now it's vice versa. They're getting hurt by the bullpen. So it's been kind of a hard season to figure out.
Yeah, and obviously they've had plenty of injuries as well. And maybe the hardest thing to figure out, Bill, and I know you were really excited about the 2016 season for Drew Smyly, and he seems to be one of the biggest mysteries as far as this team goes. I think a 10-start winless streak right now, 2-11. He took the loss on Monday night. And he's a guy that you really had high expectations. I know the Rays had high expectations. And it just hasn't worked out for Smyly. And is this an important 2 months in the career of Drew Smyly?
Yeah, I would think so. And you're totally right. I thought looking early this spring, I thought he was the, starting the season, I thought the first month of the season, he was the best guy on the staff. And flip the other side of that, I thought Matt Moore was the one struggling the most. And who knows, it might just all come down to health things, but I mean, Moore is going out there now, and I remember when he first came up, and even he says he rarely threw that hard. When he first came up, he was throwing 97, 98, and people were calling it easy gas. But I've noticed lately, you know, his command has been really, you know, he's had really good command, and he's also throwing it looks like, you know, he just kind of released it easy, like almost like a golfer with a good tempo. And then I'm looking up the scoreboard, and it's 95. So, you know, he's found his groove somehow, but it just shows you how fleeting pitching can be.
Gregor, the Blue Jays maybe getting some help on the way. It seems like Jose Bautista may be back early next week. That's good news as this team needs to get healthy for the second half of the season. We haven't recorded this podcast in a couple of weeks, the two of us, since before the All-Star game, but now's the time for the Blue Jays. They're right in the thick of things in the East with the Red Sox and the Orioles slipping up a little bit this week thus far. But when you think about getting Bautista back in the lineup, he hasn't played since June 16th. How big a lift could he give this team?
Yeah, it's a huge lift. And in a way, it's almost like, you know, adding a player at the deadline. I mean, this is a team that has kind of turned things around during Batista's absence, at least offensively. I mean, they've been averaging close to 6 runs per game. It's been a lot closer to the type of offense that people expected going into the year. And obviously adding Bautista into that mix can only help. They've done well to survive without him. Ezekiel Carrera has been a really nice fit this year. He's played really well. But anytime, obviously, you get a guy like Bautista back into the lineup, it's a huge boost for the club, especially offensively. And, it's just really good news for the Blue Jays that so many guys seem to be going in the right direction at the right time. And now they just have to hope that they keep everyone healthy from this point on. But it certainly does seem like the recruits are kind of on the way.
Yeah, and over the last week, an interesting move from the Blue Jays, I think. 2-year extension for Justin Smoke. I think maybe just the timing maybe surprised people, an in-season move. But Smoke has seemingly, you know, found a home for himself in Toronto. He had bounced around a lot in his career, never seeming to fit anywhere, but he's been good with the Blue Jays. And this also, it seems like it's a bit of an insurance policy as well. Obviously, you have Bautista and Encarnacion, both free agents at the end of the year. Chances are you're not going to bring them both back. So how key is it with all the free agents that this team's going to have to deal with in the offseason that now they don't have to worry about Justin Smoke?
Yeah, it's kind of a curious move. It was certainly caught pretty much everybody by surprise. I don't think anyone was really expecting that type of deal. But as you touched on, this is a team that has an awful lot of work to do this offseason. I mean, they've still got 9 pending free agents at the end of this season. And I think having Smoke around does provide a little bit more stability. It is interesting that they decided to lock in a roster spot this early with that type of move. But the contract itself, You know, the fact that it's just a little bit more than $4 million per year, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're permanently locked into him as being a starting first baseman as well. I mean, he's certainly going to be a big part of the mix moving forward, but it's not the type of contract that is prohibitive to other types of moves. So the one thing that general manager Ross Atkins said after that signing was, this doesn't necessarily close the door on a guy like Edwin Encarnacion coming back. I mean, they've been on the same team this year, and they could be on the same team again next year. But it was an interesting move because I don't think anyone was expecting Smoke to be the guy to get the early deal.
They have a decision to make today, I guess, Gregor, with Franklin Morales. 30 days are up as far as his time on the disabled list. They also have Marco Estrada coming back at the end of the week. So that basically two roster spots you have to kind of try to figure out. If you had to make a guess what they do to open up those spots or who stays on this pitching staff, what would you say the Blue Jays are going to do?
I think in the end, Morales is going to be back. You know, it's been interesting that it's taken this long because, I mean, he's a guy who's been out now on that rehab assignment for 30 days, and there's been a lot of you know, it seems like he's been healthy for a little while, but the Jays have really pushed this decision back. I think he'll probably come up. You'll probably see Aaron Loop get optioned to the minor leagues, and I think they'll probably take a look at Morales. He signed a $2 million deal. They haven't seen what they have from him yet. I think he'll probably get his shot. And then, you know, to make room for Estrada, this is a team that's been carrying eight relievers in the bullpen as well. When Estrada comes back, that'll probably change. They probably option a guy like Bo Schultz to the minor leagues as well. So they've got some flexibility at the end of the roster to make room for these guys coming in.
Trade deadline is less than 2 weeks away. Obviously, the Blue Jays were, I think you have to say, the big winners at the deadline a year ago, maybe them and the Mets for what they did. But those moves aren't out there this year. David Price isn't out there. Troy Tulowitzki, a guy like that, probably not out there either. When you look at this Blue Jays team, and you figure out what they're going to do, how does this team improve themselves between now and August 1st? They've talked about Aaron Sanchez moving to the bullpen over and over and over again. He continues to put up great start after great start. So how much of what they do at the deadline depends on what they decide to do with Aaron Sanchez?
I think it revolves entirely around Aaron Sanchez, because if Aaron Sanchez is to move out of a starter's role, then this team needs to make some sort of move to the rotation. I mean, Drew Hutchison is probably the guy who comes in and fills the void, but after that, the Jays just don't have any kind of starting depth whatsoever. So you have to make at least a depth move there if you were to move him. If he stays in the rotation, then you absolutely need to make some sort of move for the bullpen. You know, we've seen one move earlier this year with Jason Grilley. He's really helped solidify things in the eighth inning, and you expect that Brett Cecil will turn things around in the second half. But even so, you need some more options down there. Jesse Chavez has allowed 50% of his inherited runners to score this year. He's had some nice stretches, but he's also really struggled. To me, the bullpen, more than any other spot on this roster, needs a little bit of tinkering. And the good news for the Jays is that there does seem to be a lot of relievers out there on the market right now. If they were, you know, really in need of a starting pitcher, I think that would be a challenging move for this organization to make, especially with the fact that they don't have a lot of resources in the minor leagues to work with. They really only could kind of get a back-end type pitcher. But the relievers, there's a lot of them out there. So I would fully expect them to make at least one move there. But it does really all come down to Aaron Sanchez. And he just continues time after time to keep throwing out quality starts. And, you know, he's shown no signs of fatigue. It's going to be an awfully hard move, justifiable move. It's going to be a hard move to justify, rather, moving him out of his current role right now, because he has been that good. I mean, he's been dominant basically all season long. One of the top.
Jim, first of all, thanks for taking a few minutes out of your day and joining us here on the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. It's always a lot of fun, Tim.
All right, and this is a fun time to do the podcast because we're just out of the All-Star break, obviously. Less than 2 weeks to go until that trade deadline, and things are heating up in the American League East for sure, because the Orioles haven't exactly come out of the break like gangbusters. The bats have gone a little bit quiet, Jim. Some of that is because some of those big bats haven't been in the lineup. Obviously, Chris Davis missing some time. Weeters has been out, but this is the fear for the Orioles, right? With the pitching that they have and the issues that they have on that pitching staff, they can't afford to not be swinging the bats well.
Well, that's a very point, although if you look at how the games have gone since the All-Star break, the pitching actually has pitched pretty well. I mean, the other night in Tampa, they won a 2-1 game. Here on Monday night in New York, they lost a 2-1 game. So the pitching certainly has kept them in. But it's just one of those unusual things that nobody can explain. And as Buck Showalter likes to say, it's basically the ebb and flow of the season. How an entire lineup basically can go cold at the same time, especially one as powerful as this, you wouldn't think it's possible. But that's how it's happened out of the break. The team in the first five games out of the break, they've scored 10 runs, and they've scored only one run in each of the last two games. But I don't think there's anyone that's too overly concerned. It's frustrating when you're going through it. Last night they had a chance to get back in the game when it was 3-1. They had second and third and one out, then bases loaded, one out, and couldn't get a big hit to tie the game. So I'm sure they're going to break out of it, and they know that they have the talent. But what you mentioned from the start will be the deciding factor as the race goes forward, and that's how well the starting pitching comes around.
Yeah, and we'll see what they do to help out that starting pitching over the next couple of weeks. So as we record this on Wednesday, the lead in the East down to just a half a game, and you get the feeling that this race is going to be a good one from now all the way through September with the Orioles, the Red Sox, and the Blue Jays. It's three good baseball teams, I think, but three teams that all kind of have their flaws. And Jim, I can't see a scenario where either of any of those three teams run away with this division.
Yeah, that's probably unlikely, in particular because of how many games each team still has left within the division. And when you have series like this where it's a four-gamer, the Yankees are trying to gain ground and they have the last 2 days. But if the Orioles win the next two and split the series, the Yankees are exactly where they were when the Orioles came to town with four fewer games to play. The Red Sox, they're getting hot. They played well right up to the break, and they played well since the break. And the Blue Jays, I think, are coming around. They seem to have found their offense, and as we saw from last year, that is a very potent offense. And I think they probably have the rotation that has the fewest question marks of the teams, although the Red Sox did help their team with Drew Pomeranz, who makes his debut for the Red Sox today. So it's going to be, you know, who does what less than 2 weeks now until the trade deadline, and then how do you put it together between August and September? I do remember that in 2014, the Orioles starting pitching really came together after the All-Star break, and from late July on, they were as good or better than any staff in the league. So they have to hope that that happens. They have to hope that they can avoid what they're going through now, where it's a top-to-bottom team slump, and I think they're going to be fine because the one thing about the Orioles team, they're a very resilient team. They don't let things bother them like bother fans where, you know, they scored one run in back-to-back games and the Orioles fans are on the ledge, you know, downtown Baltimore. The Orioles are of the mindset, okay, it's Wednesday. We're going to show up. We're going to try to win today. And if they win, they have a chance to split tomorrow with their best pitcher on the mound. So the resiliency of this team has been a real high-quality trait since they turned the corner and got into the playoffs in 2012.
And, Jim, I mentioned the guys that have been out through this little slump, Davis and Weeters, and now Hyun-Soo Kim also heading to the disabled list. And he's been such a fascinating player this season. Obviously, the struggles, the epic struggles in spring training, and then he refused to accept a trip to the minors. And then he figured it out. He got comfortable probably in this country as much as in the lineup, and he really had been hitting well. How much does his trip to the DL kind of just – hurt this lineup right now when he's been such an important factor when you didn't necessarily see that coming early in the season?
Yeah, it really does hurt the lineup because Buck had been batting him second, and that splits Adam and Manny with a righty-lefty-righty. But the other thing is he's a high-energy guy, and the other thing about him is he's very unselfish as a hitter. He uses foul line to foul line, and he's probably as good an opposite field hitter to left field as he is a pull hitter. And I think if you look back to spring training, we remember it, I think he was 0 for his first 25 in Sarasota. And the biggest problem was in the Korean Baseball League, the pitchers just don't have the velocity that they have in the major leagues. And he was having a heck of a time getting around on the fastball.
And if you're a major leaguer and you can't get around on a fastball, they're going to eat you alive, because then you're cheating for the fastball and the breaking stuff becomes so effective. And then you swing and a miss because you're expecting it to do one thing and it's something else. But you got to give the guy credit. I mean, he did work at it. In April, he hardly played at all, but he was a good observer from the bench, watching the team, batting practice, working on it. I think Scott Coolball, the hitting coach, deserves a lot of credit because he kept it positive with Kim, tried to do some things with his swing to shorten the swing so he wouldn't have to cheat so much on the fastball. And now he seems to be fine. I mean, this game is all about timing. In Sarasota in March, his timing was off. It was horrible. But now he has his timing. And the other thing about him, what is really impressive, is that he has a good capacity and a knack for making contact consistently. So he's not a strikeout guy. So, if the leadoff man, in this case, Adam Jones, who's been leading off since that series in May in Cleveland, if he gets on base, you got a guy coming up next in Kim that's going to put the ball in play in all likelihood. So, he's a bigger loss than I think any of us realize. But it was a wise move to put him on the DL. They gave it up until yesterday, and the hamstring he's not too far off, and with the days off for the All-Star break, that'll shorten the time on the DL games-wise. But they were playing a man short, and with Wieters not able to play last night and likely tonight, I haven't seen the lineup yet because he was hit by the pitch in the foot. The other night, they had a two-man bench, and it's very hard at this level to compete late in close games when you have a two-man bench, and that's why the move had to be made. So hopefully he'll be back when the DL period is up, because amazingly here in July, he has become a very important hitter to the lineup because he's such a different hitter from the rest of the guys that go to bat every day for the O's.
And Julio Borbón is the guy that gets called up from Double A, and that's a familiar name, I think, for people throughout baseball, a guy who's spent a lot of time in the big league, so he'll fill that roster spot. All right, well, the deadline, as we've said, less than 2 weeks away, and the obvious need is starting pitching, and unfortunately for the Orioles, it's not something that's abundantly available out there as far as the trade deadline goes. There are guys there. I know the Orioles also don't want to give up too much from an already thin minor league system to get somebody. So if you had to kind of handicap things right now, Jim, and decide which kind of pitcher this Orioles team could end up adding between now and August 1st, what kind of a guy do you expect them to get?
You know, I honestly have no idea. And I say that because you mentioned it. It's what the teams are asking for. And obviously there are players in the system. We may not have an abundance of talent in the minor leagues, but there are some players that are very, very attractive to other teams. And, you know, they may be 19 and 20 years old at Delmarva in low A ball, but there are several pitchers on that team that are very attractive to teams that are building for the future. So the question is it a trade where you're going for the higher end starter? And you're correct. There doesn't appear to be many of those available. So do you sacrifice the top young talent for the future? Or do you go for somebody where maybe a team is looking to shed a salary, where if you're willing to pay the money, you don't have to give up as big of a prospect or as many prospects and then go from there? Now, that scenario might play in their favor because they'll take on salary in this organization. If they can win, they'll do it. Now, I don't know who that pitcher is. I know Irvin Santana's name keeps floating up in every trade rumor associated with the Orioles, and he pitched really well again today. So that might be a name that you see tied to the Orioles. The question is, the Twins now without a GM, what do they ask the Orioles for? And if the Orioles are willing to eat the salary, does a lesser prospect have to go back to Minnesota just to take that salary off their books? Dan Duquette has always been a guy in charge of a team that if you have a chance to win, he's going to go out and make a move to make this team better. Their attitude is the future is now. It's all about the major league team. You worry about the future in the future, but you do what you have to do to help this team. And that doesn't mean they're going to make a silly trade and just give away the farm. But if they have a chance to get somebody they know is an upgrade and they know can help, because this team has a chance to go to the World Series, and they'd be doing themselves an injustice. And I know they won't go this route if they don't do something. But again, the question is, Tim, what's there, what's available for the asking price? And you have to ask yourself, okay, Is this guy really an upgrade for the three prospects they're asking for? And I think that's what it's going to come down to. But with so few starting pitchers available and so many teams needing starting pitching, It's going to be a premium, and the teams are definitely in charge that have the talent. I mean, it's a, without a doubt, it's a seller's market.